Hi, this is Lori Janik. Welcome to the Legal Affairs Podcast Series with your host, Finley P. Maxson.
Welcome to the NAR Legal Affairs August Podcast. This month, we are going to discuss the National Flood Insurance Program and related issues with NAR staff members Russell Riggs and Ralph Holman. Russell is the Senior Regulatory and Policy Representative in the Washington, D.C. office, while Ralph is NAR's Associate General Counsel. Russell is going to give us background into changes to the flood program for 2013, and Ralph is going to discuss potential disclosure issues that real estate professionals may face regarding flood insurance. Welcome to the podcast, Russell.
Thank you, Finley.
First, can you give us some recent background into the flood insurance program and the changes that the Biggert Waters Act brought?
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. You know, the one way that I like to talk about the flood insurance program and the recent changes are by looking at it from the perspective of the past, the present, and the future. Let's think about what was happening in the past before the Biggert Waters legislation was passed last year. Over the past decade, since about 2001, the National Flood Insurance Program was supposed to have been reauthorized several times. Instead of getting reauthorized for a long period of time, it was reauthorized for 3 months at a time, 6 months at a time. And it actually lapsed twice over that 10-year period. Now, when you have these short-term reauthorizations and you have these lapses in the program, it undermines housing across the country because so many people depend on the National Flood Insurance Program for flood insurance. 56,000 communities, over 20 million people, have policies in the National Flood Insurance Program. So when you have these lapses, when you have this extension of short term, lenders aren't sure about whether there's going to be a program in 3 months. Realtors aren't sure. Buyers aren't sure. It undermines confidence in real estate markets across the country. So that was the past, and it was not a good way to operate this program. Another thing that happened in the past, 2005, as you know, Katrina hit the Gulf Coast, and all of a sudden you had lots of people who had flood insurance, were in the flood insurance program, put claims on the program because of the massive flooding that occurred after Hurricane Katrina. And as a result of all the people making claims on the NFIP, the program was in debt by about $17 billion. Flash forward to 2012, and you had Hurricane Sandy that hit New Jersey and New York and Connecticut. Another $10 billion in debt because everyone who had flood insurance who were paying into the program put claims on the program because of the massive and widespread flooding. So now you have a program that was approximately $30 billion in debt. So that's the past. All those activities, all those events led up to the Biggert Waters legislation. So the Biggert Waters legislation was sponsored by Judy Biggert from Illinois and Maxine Waters from California, tried to do a number of different things to make program more actuarially sound and more financially sound. First of all, the big benefit for us was it reauthorized the program for 5 years. So it strengthened confidence in real estate markets across the country. There is no question about whether the program is going to be in existence in 3 months, whether you could purchase flood insurance in 2 months when you were purchasing a home. For 5 years, it was reauthorized until 2017. However, in Washington, you have to give something to get something. So we were able to get a 5-year long-term reauthorization of the program. We had to give up some significant provisions. The bill maintained comprehensive coverage and program access for all properties, including second homes and vacation homes. So everyone still has the opportunity to purchase flood insurance. What the bill did do was eliminate subsidized insurance rates on properties with repeated flood losses and claims, eliminates rate subsidies on older primary and second homes, but importantly, it phases this elimination over a 5-year period, which NAR fought for. Originally, the bill had it as of when the bill was enacted, all of these subsidized rates were going to go away. And NAR fought hard to make sure that it was phased in over a longer period of time. Another important provision was that it reimburses a homeowner's expenses when they successfully challenge a flood map. For example, and NAR fought for this as well. For example, the maps sometimes are incorrect. They place a property within the floodplain when it should not be in the floodplain. This provision allows for FEMA to reimburse the expenses when you appeal that decision. When you say, I don't think it is, and here's the information and scientific data that shows that my home is not in the floodplain, even though you say it is, and if FEMA agrees with this information, they will reimburse your expenses for that. And finally, the Biggert Waters legislation requires FEMA and other federal agencies to produce several different reports on availability and affordability of these changes to the NFIP. In other words, how will these rate changes, how will these premium increases and phased out subsidized increases, how will they affect housing affordability? So one of the things that we have been working on with our members since Biggert Waters passed was to, first of all, educate our members about the provisions of the new law and continue to work with FEMA to make sure the regulations are implemented fairly and consistently. However, there has been widespread concern about high flood insurance premiums and the impacts these high premiums could have on housing affordability and the economy. For this reason, NAR is supporting legislation which passed the House just a couple of months ago and is awaiting debate in the Senate that delays implementation of some of these rate increases until their impacts on housing affordability can be assessed. We have heard of lots of different stories and anecdotes about how much people are now going to be paying for their flood insurance. It's a complicated issue because it has to do with the rates, it has to do with the maps, it has to do with new maps, it has to do with the type of house and the construction of the house, where the house is located. There are lots of variables as to how a rate in the flood insurance program is calculated. So what we are doing now is surveying our members and allowing them to provide us information and input about what they're hearing in the field in their localities about how these new rate increases are occurring, where they're occurring, and what the reasons might be. In addition, NAR President Gary Thomas has appointed a presidential advisory group, which will review NAR's current policy related to the National Flood Insurance Program and provide guidance for NAR's future direction and approach in this area. So we've spoken about the past, we've spoken about the present, and now let's think a little bit about the future. Clearly, the National Flood Insurance Program is critical to a lot of people. It's critical to the success of many NAR members. So we have to make sure there is a program that provides available and affordable flood insurance. But we also have to make sure that the program is sustainable and is viable over the long term. And that's really the challenge that we see. We need to make sure that this program is actuarially sound and is financially sound. $30 billion in debt is a lot of money. We need to start chipping away at that. But we have to make sure that people can afford the flood insurance that they want to purchase. Otherwise, they might not buy flood insurance, and they'll get flooded and have to tap into the federal disaster assistance programs that are available. It's always cheaper to buy insurance prior to a flood than have to tap into federal disaster assistance provided by taxpayers after a flood has occurred. So I think with that, Finley, I'll stop and let you ask another question if you have one.
So, Russell, you've been talking to members about the rate increases in their area. Can you give us a sense in how much rates have increased in certain parts of the country?
Well, as I said before, there's lots of variability, and it depends on a number of different factors. But we're certainly seeing rate increases, particularly in neighborhoods that are on the coast, and older neighborhoods on the coast, such as in New Jersey, in Hilton Head, Louisiana. If you have an older home that has had subsidized flood insurance in the past, you're going to see your rates increase. It could be, let's say you're paying right now $400. That could increase by as much as $10,000. And that's a scary number, I realize that. But these are only in a very limited number of places. But you are going to see widespread rate increases, even inland along lakes and rivers. And it also depends on the status of your flood insurance map. It depends on if FEMA has updated the map. If it's going to be an updated map, it's very likely will include more properties than before because they've become much more adept at making maps that are more accurate and more timely. So again, there's lots of variability. There's lots of controversy about these rate increases and what's causing them. And that's one of the reasons why we want to get down to the bottom of why it's happening and are there ways that we can help mitigate those rate increases.
Okay, well, you touched on a little bit of what NAR's efforts are legislatively to mitigate some of the consequences of Biggert Waters, but can you detail all of the efforts that NAR is currently undertaking?
Well, certainly we are working with FEMA, too, to make sure they understand the effect of these rate increases on housing affordability. We've been in constant contact with FEMA officials, and when I mean contact, I'm talking about writing comment letters, phone calls, being in meetings with them to describe the impacts. We have also urged them to find flexibility where they can in the implementation of the Biggert Waters Law. And remember, Congress passes the laws, and the federal agencies implement them. But they do have discretion in how they implement these laws through their regulatory process. So we are urging FEMA to find whatever discretion and flexibility they can to make sure they implement these regulations fairly and to make sure that these premium increases don't throw people out of their homes unnecessarily. That's why the affordability report is so critical, because we really need to get a good handle on how these higher premiums are now affecting housing affordability. So we are urging FEMA to proceed quickly with developing the affordability report, and we'll continue to keep in close contact with them as this process moves forward. We've also sponsored several webinars with FEMA, as well as in different states around the country that have been affected. We have touched on, I think, just about every single Mid-Atlantic and Gulf Coast state, either through a webinar or have actually gone down and met with members, and we'll continue to do so. And we have a vast number of resources on our webpage that I believe is going to be linked to this podcast. At the NAR webpage has lots of information and resources about the implementation of the Biggert Waters Act and additional information, recordings of webinars, all of our comment letters and letters to Congress.
We will link to that page, Russell. Are there any other resources that you would encourage listeners to consult?
I think they should also go to the FEMA website as well. There's a great webpage on how they are implementing Biggert Waters and the various provisions, and it's updated on a regular basis. So I would encourage listeners to go there as well.
Thank you, Russell, for that background. One of the resources that NAR has developed is a legal guidance document for members who may need to make disclosures about flood insurance during the representation of a client. Here to talk about that article is its author, Ralph Holman. Welcome to the podcast, Ralph.
Thank you, Finley.
Can you explain when a real estate professional may have a legal obligation to disclose information about flood insurance?
Sure, I'd be happy to talk about that. As you know, as a general rule, real estate brokers and agents are required to disclose material adverse factors or features of a property of which they have actual knowledge. So what that means in this context is if a broker or agent has no knowledge that a property is subject to flooding, is it within the floodplain as revealed on the FEMA maps, or that lenders have previously required loans on the property to also be accompanied by flood insurance, he probably has no disclosure obligation. But in this context, it's probably more likely that the broker agent will in fact know with respect to properties that flood insurance are required. You know, that property, because he or she may have previously been involved in a transaction involving a property, or properties in the neighborhood or in the area that the broker agent has been involved in, have been subject to the flood insurance requirement. And that's the kind of case where the broker agent should disclose to the purchaser that should they purchase the property and seek a loan on it, flood insurance will likely be required by the lender.
What advice would you give to a real estate professional who is providing a flood insurance disclosure to another party?
Well, in cases where, as I just discussed, information about the obligation to maintain flood insurance is required or at least prudent to be disclosed, then the broker, as Russell just described a few minutes ago, the flood insurance program has changed in a way that has caused flood insurance rates to be higher than they used to be, and in some cases substantially higher. So in addition to advising the purchaser that flood insurance is likely to be required, the broker agent should also advise the purchaser that the rates that he or she is likely to pay for those flood insurance are not likely to be rates which are similar to those that have been paid in the past, that they are likely to differ and in some cases may be significantly higher, and that he or she should anticipate and factor into his purchase decision, the possibility at least, that those rates might increase substantially. We've prepared, as Finley referenced, some information to assist brokers and agents in making that disclosure, which is available on our website. It's a disclosure statement which, again, discloses the likelihood, or in some cases maybe the certainty, that flood insurance is going to be required, discloses the fact that flood insurance rates are likely to be higher these days because of the restructuring of the federal flood insurance program, and that rates that are previously paid for flood insurance on the property should not be relied on as an indication of what rates are likely to be in the near or perhaps longer term future. So that's intended to guide brokers and agents in making these kinds of disclosures where it's required.
Thank you for that information. Links to the materials referenced in this podcast can be found on the podcast page on Realtor.org. We would like to remind our audience that this podcast was recorded on August 8th, 2013. Information provided in the podcast may no longer be current, and so listeners should confirm independently its accuracy.